For the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking insurance. Now, wait, before you change the channel to Rush, so stay with us because we're not going to really talk about selling you insurance because, you know, insurance is actually quite involved in our daily life besides protecting you. The insurance business is very proactive. Did you know that the first fire departments, building codes, car safety, seat belts, things like that were all started by the insurance industry? Sometimes the insurance companies help influence the direction of government policy, the future of industries. You remember back to Three Mile Island? There are some experts who believe that the nuclear power industry went out of business following Three Mile Island because they couldn't get insurance to build any new reactors. Lately, we're seeing more and more extreme weather events like hurricanes that cause massive damage, and drought and extreme heat. Look at the summer we're having here in the east and out west. Thousands of deaths caused by these extreme weather events. Insurance companies are asked to pay for the damage of some of these disasters. And that raises an interesting question. How would the insurance industry deal with not just sporadic winds or flooding and heat that maybe come once every few years, but with a more permanent trend like global warming and climate change? What if they decided not to write policies for people or companies that are caught in the grip of global warming? Perhaps you and me, for our homes, our businesses, our neighbors throughout the world. Well, someone has actually been thinking about that. That's the subject of a Viewpoint article this week in the journal Science, written by my next guest. Evan Mills is a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Berkeley, California. Is also a co-author of the chapter in the 2001 report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, dealing with insurance and financial services, and he joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mills.
Thanks, Eric. Good to be here.
Are people beginning to think, and the insurance industry beginning to contemplate, what if global warming could wreak havoc on our, you know, our homes and things like that?
They certainly are, and in fact, not just beginning, the first written evidence I can find of that goes back all the way to 1973, where German insurer Munich Re speculated that climate change could lead to more flooding losses.
And how are they? And what are your thoughts and their thoughts on how they're going to cope with this if it happens on a large scale?
Well, yeah, it's a key question. There are two kind of strands, or there's a fork in the road. Let's say there's a reactive set of responses, and those are the ones that might come to mind first. Increasing prices, increasing deductibles, reducing the limits of coverages, excluding new hazards, or non-renewing, you know, policies. That whole class of what you might call reactive responses, and there will no doubt be some of that. But then there's a proactive side, which is to engage constructively, as in some of the ways that you had mentioned in your setup, that insurers their roots really go back to loss prevention and managing risk, not only passively waiting for losses to happen and paying claims, but getting involved in managing the risks. And so that could range from looking at directly at emissions reductions and how that might come about, but also, you know, just better science, better mm-hmm. data. We're flying partially blind here. The industry is, in the sense of not knowing all it could know about the current state of affairs and what the outlook is.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Evan Mills, a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Berkeley, California, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Might there come a time where, where like Three Mile Island, you might have insurance companies that refuse to insure maybe industries that do not cut down on greenhouse gases or insure people who do not do, you know, greenhouse-friendly living styles?
Well, yeah, and not only might there come a time, but we're essentially there, beginning to be there now. I just had news today of the seventh insurer who's decided to stop writing new policies in Florida in the wake of the big hurricane season we had last year. You mentioned Three Mile Island in your setup, and then what we saw is that the government had to step in with, I think it was at that time, there was the Price-Anderson Act, which
right.
called for government insurance of nuclear power losses. And so it's a palpable, you know, reality. And, it's interesting you mentioned the kind of the liability side, that it's not just a property insurance risk of, you know, physical structures and so on being damaged, but also a liability side. So will some of the emitters of greenhouse gases be exposed to liabilities? And if so, there's a liability, corporate liability issue there. Will directors and officers insurance start to take account for corporate responsibility of not necessarily as emitters, but are corporations protecting their assets and their customers? And the Swiss Reinsurance Company is already starting to look at that in North America. So there are property exposures, liability exposures, and also life and health exposures, which have not been looked at a lot until recently. In fact, the Swiss Reinsurance Company has sponsored the Harvard Medical School's Center for Health and a Global Environment to do a big piece of work on that, and it'll be coming out in November, a big meeting at the American Museum of Natural History in New York.
Interesting. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking about, of all things, the insurance industry and how it's going to react to global warming. But we have, as I said before, the insurance industry is a big 800-pound gorilla here, isn't it?
Yeah, in fact, it's the world's largest industry. It's a little bit dizzying, but last year the global premiums, we're talking about, you know, all across the board, life, health, property, $3.2 trillion. So it's $3.2 thousand billion of revenues. And if you looked at it like a country, compared it to the GDP of countries, it would be the third largest country in the world. So indeed, it's a very large industry.
And where would we see some, you mentioned there are already some actions. What are going to be the key battlegrounds here first for the insurance companies?
Well, how do you mean that? In a geographical sense or?
In where they'll try to use their influence the most.
Well, I think, I think one of the most important arenas is what they call the emerging markets. This is the developing countries, economies in transition, and the reasons are twofold. One is that those environments are the most vulnerable often because of lack of historical building codes or lack of adequate enforcement of codes. A lot of economic activity. It's very weather sensitive, right? You've got agriculture, a lot of coastal based industry, and then lack of preparedness. You know, absence of early warning systems, things of that sort. So you couple that exposure with the fact that those parts of the world are the most rapid growing insurance markets. And I really see that those regions as the future of the industry. Of course, today they're small, although not as small as you may think. About 12% of global insurance premiums are from the developing world, from these markets, and that's $400 billion a year of premium. So it's important now, and it's growing at 2 and 3 times the rate of insurance here, double digits in many countries. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big battleground for them, but certainly not the only one.
All right, stay with us. We're talking with Evan Mills and talking about insurance and the climate. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking for the rest of the hour about the insurance industry influencing the future of global warming. Kind of an interesting take on this issue. How can the insurance industry, which, you know, has influenced industries before, could it influence the direction that governments or industries take by deciding whether to insure what they do? My guest is Evan Mills. He's staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Berkeley, California. He's also the author of a Viewpoint article this week about insurance and global warming in the journal Science. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. You mentioned that there was this, what was it, $400 billion insurance industry in developing countries?
That's right.
Are they able to afford the kind, poor people able to afford the kind of insurance they might need, or are you talking about the governments themselves?
Well, yeah, of course there's an affordability issue, and not surprisingly, the premiums there are paid by the more affluent layers of the society and from the commercial or, you know, the non-residential sides. But there is a huge affordability. Well, and you mentioned governments, and they are there more than anywhere the insurers of last resort and will absorb a lot of these costs, as will governments like ours through the international aid and, you know, disaster preparedness and recovery side. So there's a patchwork of risk sharing. But the poorest of the poor, of course, do not have ready access to insurance. One of the constructive solutions or systems being offered is what's called microinsurance, and you may have heard of microcredit. It's a more well-known idea of very small denomination loans so that small businesses can, you know, finance their activity. But the same idea is being applied to insurance. And, you know, if you live in Bangladesh and your house is inundated by one of the, you know, predictable floods there, it's a matter of hundreds and not thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to repair. And so insurance can be denominated in very small, affordable premium levels. And I think that's an exciting frontier, and it's one of the constructive ways that the insurers can help, you know, fortify the the people at the bottom of the pyramid, if you will.
Mm-hmm. But you could also be living in Florida now. Are insurance companies saying, hey, you know, there are record numbers of hurricanes headed to Florida. We had four, in, you know, last year in one short period of time, like a month. We're not going to insure you if you build in certain places because of those hurricanes heading
in. It's a very large concern, and you know, insurers have already stopped. Some insurers have stopped doing business there. Just today, Nationwide announced that they'll no longer write policies, and that was after getting a premium hike of over 20% approved. So even with the permission to charge more premiums, they felt the market was, you know, too risky. But you, certainly the coastlines aren't the only areas where we're worried a lot about wildfire. We're worried a lot about flooding. So there's many different arenas where, you know, what they call affordability is really an issue. And, well, availability is an issue. And if not that, then pricing can be a problem. And so we do, we are concerned about the kind of contraction. And, we, you know, we've seen that historically. We have, of course, here in the U.S., a National Flood Insurance Program, and that's a government-underwritten flood program for homeowners and small businesses. There's still commercial insurance for large businesses, but that's an area where the private insurer said this is not insurable. And, of course, we also have that for certain crop losses, and there's a very old crop insurance program that's also government-underwritten. So there's a trend, there's precedent, and conceivably it will move more in that direction. So it's a big public policy question. How much appetite does the government have for this risk? Of course, it's ultimately paid by taxpayers.
Right. And it's actually subsidizing the polluters who put out the greenhouse gases.
I don't know if I'd say subsidy, but it certainly...
You're taking the risk off of their, the burden off of their risk and putting it on the people who are building
enough.
Their homes.
Well, fair enough. And so you have, you know, some economists use the language externalities. You know, you have a cost of the polluting activities, the greenhouse gas emissions that is, you know, borne by others in the market or not really properly quantified. And, you know, that's not healthy. I mean, most economists think that cost should be, you know, transparent and the cost should affect, the prices in the market should reflect. But on the other hand, the presence of insurance itself is a useful thing because it does monetize these effects and it lets the market see some of the costs of climate change, and that's not always the available.
1-800-989-8255. Dan in Denver. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to take my answer off the air. I want to challenge a couple of things and see what your guest thinks about this. And in the setup piece, it seemed that you were saying that the damage caused by a TMI kind of incident was equivalent to the damage caused by greenhouse gases. And it seems to me that the science is still yet a little bit controversial in some areas, and it's not well established, although I'd be interested to hear what your guest says. And I think the other thing is it seems to me that, you know, insurance is a product, and they make money by selling products. And if they can stampede people into being afraid, and you know, they can make money by doing that. So I'm going to take my
Let me just qualify your question. Are you saying that you don't think the science of global warming is good enough yet to justify doing this? Oh, he's gone. What do you think about that, Evan?
Sure. Well, there's two questions there. You know, the climate contrarians have certainly made quite an industry for themselves, and unfortunately, when there's one or two contrarians per thousand people on the other side, it's often presented as a vigorous debate and so on. But really, there's quite an enormous scientific consensus on the basic issues here, and many things that really everyone agrees on. And we know from basic scientific principles that we expect a lot of these kind of losses. We know that to expect more lightning. We know to expect higher temperatures, and the hydrological cycle is getting hyperventilated, if you will, and we expect more floods. And so the point is the climate theory, what you'd expect, is reflected in what we are seeing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also if you take the climate models and you backcast, if you say, well, let's turn the model around and point backwards in history and say, how well does this model do in telling us what the temperatures would have been? And they do remarkably well. And they do poorly if you exclude the human emissions of greenhouse gases. And they do much better when you include them. So that helps to zero in. So I think we know a lot. And, you know, one of the things that intrigued me to the insurance question is that it's kind of right in the vein that your questioner was asking is that there are uncertainties. But in insurance and, frankly, real life deals with uncertainties all the time, and uncertainty is not in itself a reason for inaction. And insurers know and embody that, you know, more than most segments of the market. And so they, in other words, they continue to function and operate, and that's what actuarial science is all about. And that's what, in fact, why we buy insurance. If we were certain of any particular events, no one would sell insurance for it. So the second part of the question is, and I've heard this before, there's kind of a cynical analysis that this is the insurer's concerns about climate change are strictly to develop more business. And I wouldn't be surprised to find individual companies out there, not that I think I've seen them, but you could imagine that taking place in isolated examples. But you know, if you look at this, many of the things that the insurers are doing, scientifically, otherwise, are not fear-fomenting activities. They're constructive. They're solution-oriented. They're designed to improve understanding and therefore preparedness, therefore reduce losses, therefore manage prices. So it's not it doesn't really, you know, parse with the actions that the insurers are taking. And some people, you know, say they want to get the prices up. And in the U.S. at least, you know, the regulators don't allow that. One of the odd kind of quirks here is that insurance pricing has to be based strictly on historical losses. So you can't just come in and say, I have a projection that climate change is going to double my, mm-hmm. my losses, give me a 100% increase. So that's kind of a non-starter for them. And meanwhile, there are material business risks here. And you'd hope that any industry that faced a risk, whether it was climate change or something else, would be vocal about it and active.
Mm-hmm. You know, you would think that insurance actuaries and insurance people must really depend on getting good data. Mm-hmm. Do they use climate change models now, or are they using climate change models to forecast how much liability they may have to, you know, to eat next year or stuff like that?
Yeah, well, great question and great Science Friday question. And the answer is largely no. There is a rich modeling tradition that among insurers. It was started largely in the aftermath of Hurricane Andrew, where one of many times, unfortunately, in history where events that were considered impossible did materialize. 9/11 was another one, unfortunately. And so a whole industry of what's called CAT modeling or catastrophe modeling was born. And it's very effective at taking a normatively defined event, a hurricane of a certain size that's stipulated, you know, by the modelers, and say, well, what would happen if it followed this path? And the models know a lot about the exposures, the numbers of houses and value. And they give a good reading on what the cost will be. The weakness is that they're based strictly on historical experience. They do not include a variable for changing climate. And so, and then let's turn the camera over to the climate modeling community. They're purely future oriented and not economically oriented. They're more of a natural science based modeling, and it's valuable and useful. But great opportunity in integrating these two communities and sets of techniques, and it's just starting to happen. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, the Association of British Insurers, the trade association in the UK, released a very innovative study where they worked with one of the three large CAT modeling firms here in the U.S., and they put that together with climate modeling understanding and did projections of future hurricane losses and I think a typhoon in Japan and events in Europe, and were able to shed a lot of light on economic consequences and insured mm-hmm. losses. And it was profound. They saw, I think, roughly a doubling of expected hurricane economic losses in the U.S. and corresponding increase in the pricing impact. But in lower emissions, and this is where it gets really interesting, in lower emissions scenarios, they saw a much more gradual increase in the losses. So actually these tools and scientific methods that are just on the cusp of being, you know, developed can help us actually quantify some of the benefits of greenhouse gas reductions.
You might also argue that if the insurance folks are doing the calculations, global warming must be real if they're worried about it. 1-800-989-8255. Don in Buffalo. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, good to be here. I'm an insurance agent in Buffalo, New York, and what I was going to say was that insurance companies are insuring fortuitous events. In other words, something that is not guaranteed to happen but could happen, and they have actuaries to figure this out. And I was thinking about how they've changed the face of, for example, life insurance with when smoking was bringing on cancer, they say, okay, we're going to charge more. Or when AIDS came in, we're going to have blood tests. We're going to do things to better predict the future. But this global warming thing is a really scary thing, and I see a lot of this in the trade magazines, and you know, they're talking about it quite a bit. And it's not like these are, you know, wild-eyed people that are off the handle. These are pretty conservative folk that are trying to make a buck. Obviously, they're in business to make money. But I think the other side of it is that what we've seen, for example, in flood insurance is that insurance will do something that the government won't do. When the Ohio River Valley was flooding year after year and people would get paid and then they'd rebuild, when FEMA came in with this flood program administered by the insurance companies, they said, gee whiz, if the place is over 50% flooded, we won't rebuild that. You can rebuild back there, but you can't get the insurance. Well, effectively what it did, it changed what people's approach were to building in areas that were at risk. And I think, rightfully so, I think insurance could probably do more to affect what's happening in this arena than even government or anything else, because people look at their pocketbook.
Hang on a second. Let me remind everybody that this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow here talking with Evan Mills and caller Don. So you actually backed up what I was saying before, thank you, is that how influential insurance agents like you and the insurance industry is in bringing about change. How do you see, as an insurance agent, it affecting, you know, is that where you think it's going to filter down to, the floodplain, the people who are building in areas maybe in Florida who are going to be denied insurance, maybe forcing the government to step in, and then we'll all pay more attention to global warming?
Well, it's hard to say. It's so politicized. There are areas along the Atlantic coast that should never have be built on, you know, the dune areas and such. And from an actuarial standpoint, they should be a mile away from the shore. But from a political standpoint, people want to buy and build on sand dunes. They want to be close to the shore. So there's a real conflict there. And I think the bottom line is if it's going to cost more money, and I think that it gets focused in, if you're paying more money, then it affects you, and you're going to be a little more vocal as opposed to government in general, where they add another dollar to your tax, and I don't think we see it. It just doesn't happen.
All right, Don. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. What do you think of that, Devin?
I think those are great points, and I'm very glad that an insurance agent called in, because there are a lot of trade allies or market partners out there. It's not just the insurers, it's the reinsurers, it's the brokers, it's the agents, it's the risk managers, and they all have a role to play in helping understand and take actions. The flood issue is important. Sometimes people use the fancy word maladaptation. You don't want to, by providing insurance or some kind of safety net, you don't want to encourage people to settle in harm's way. And insurance can be used, certainly, if you're non-smoker and you get better premiums, or you have a good driving record and you get a credit, that whole idea of differentiating premiums to reward responsible behavior or loss-controlling behavior is very good, and I think insurers can do more of that. The flood problem is interesting because it comes back to what we were talking about a minute ago. As the modeling gets better and the data get better, some insurers are saying, we can reapproach flood insurance more, because it's really been very difficult for the industry to provide flood insurance with any kind of security for itself. And that's one of the exciting things about the better science and the better modeling, is that it can help actually protect the insurability and counteract some of these the trends towards more and more uncertainty. I do think that, one of the important stakeholders here that we haven't mentioned yet are the insurance regulators, and they're an extremely key factor, because they look over two things. They look over the welfare of the consumers, you and I as insurance buyers and businesses, and also the insurance companies themselves. And so on the first front, they want insurance to be affordable, and they certainly want it to be available. That's part of their mandate. And on the company side, they want these companies to remain solvent for their own business well-being and to support the first objective, that if the insurance company isn't there after an event, whether it's a flood or whatever else, no one benefits. And so the regulators are just now really coming to this issue in earnest, and it's an exciting time, and it's very appropriate that they focus on it. There's a very interesting group called CERES, which is a coalition of investors and environmentalists that look at business implications of environmental issues, and they've been engaging with insurance regulators around the country, and will actually show up at the National Association of Insurance Commissioners meeting in New Orleans in September, I think, and continue this conversation.
Well, we'll continue this conversation also. I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Very interesting. Who thought talking insurance would be so interesting? Thanks again. Evan Mills, a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Berkeley, California. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Ryan Havers in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Malesky, Alphonse Vinn. If you missed Science Friday today or other days, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can download it on your iPod and listen to it on Real Audio or take it with you on your Audible player. Also, back editions are available for teachers to download the curricula. We make free curricula. Just click on the teachers button right there on the left side of the page. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.